Hey everybody, it's Laura, and I am sitting here in my kitchen in Edinburgh, and I'm so happy to be producing another podcast in this season on the Divine Feminine and Masculine. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for following the podcast and sharing it with other people. And today I'm here to disrupt materialism around Madonna. Not Madonna, like I'm a material girl, Madonna. That's kind of funny now that I'm thinking about it. But the Madonna, and specifically the art genre of the Black Madonna, and I'm with Stephanie Georgieff, and I am blown away by Stephanie's work. She is trained as a scientist. The whole episode is really moving and mysterious, and you'll hear her at the end say something like, "Our culture and our world has gone as far as we can in material reality. And that's why we start to see science and art and culture meet in this sort of middle space." Stephanie, let me just tell you a little bit about her. She hosts the podcast, The Black Madonna Speaks, and she's written The Black Madonna, Mysterious Soul Companion, The Virgin of Guadalupe, Mysterious Messenger of Destiny, and has several other books coming out that will be published over the next few years. She has a YouTube channel called The Heart of the Black Madonna, and she explores the divine feminine and anthroposophy there through art, history, and culture. She's also educated as a naturopath and an acupuncturist, such an interesting person, and right now is working in Bulgaria with the International Fellowship of St. John as a house manager, a safe house for refugees and women in crisis. So this is one of the most interesting people I've ever met. Thank you, Stephanie, for saying yes to being on the podcast with me. And I hope you enjoy it. And yeah, please share it with your friends. And you can find Stephanie's work. I'll put all the links in the show notes for you to check it out. Looking forward to next time. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome to That Good May Become with me, Laura Scappaticci, where we learn to illuminate the esoteric in our everyday lives. Hey, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining me on That Good May Become. I'm super excited, especially because you were just here in Edinburgh and I missed you. And I missed you in New Mexico, but you are in your home in Bulgaria. So maybe can you tell us a little bit about just the work you're doing there? And then I cannot wait to start talking about your podcast, The Black Madonna Speaks, and all your work with the Divine Feminine.
Well, one of the, and I'm personally very grateful to you for reaching out to me. I'm really honored to participate in this wonderful initiative of yours. And one of my greatest gifts and challenges is that I'm very eclectic, like super eclectic. So it's hard to say, well, what is it that you're doing? But my day job right now is I am serving with the International Fellowship of St. John. And the original intent was to work as a house manager in a transition home for Roma girls aging out of orphanages. And when I was hired before all of the events starting in February in the Ukraine, they had not gotten their licensing from the Bulgarian government yet. So I was coming over to help prepare and get the house ready, et cetera, et cetera. And then the war broke out, and the foundation, because they hadn't gotten their licensing yet, decided to open up the house to Ukrainian refugees. So starting in April, I've been living with Ukrainian refugees and simply being available. And it's been a very wonderful journey. We also have received our licensing and now are considered a safe house for victims of domestic violence, as well as girls transitioning. So we've yet to receive our Roma guests yet, But we're waiting with anticipation and bated breath for that to happen. And in the meantime, it's been a really lovely experience to be living and serving Ukrainians during this very challenging time. So that's what I'm doing mostly.
That's really beautiful. And I feel like it just aligns so nicely with your work and these beautiful figures that you discuss on your podcast and on your YouTube channel that are really there to bring hope and inspire and offer service to people. So even though it's eclectic, I think probably you would say that everything is aligned. It sounds super aligned to me. Yeah.
It really is. I mean, these images were essentially born, quote unquote, either in the Holy Land or in Africa. And they came up through Byzantium, you know, in Constantinople, and then they made their way through to all parts of Europe. And obviously from there, they made their way into the New World. And it's so interesting to me personally, because the place I'm in Western Bulgaria is used to be part of the Byzantine Empire. And this is the land where the Apostle Paul first did his preaching and evangelization. So it's very, very interesting to be in the land that resonates with that ancient Christianity, which I feel the Black Madonna embodies amongst other things. But it's very interesting to me to be in this part of the world at this time in history. So I feel very blessed to be here.
Yeah, well, it really going back to the roots of Christianity, like you're saying, is very profound because of the many iterations and changes we've seen over time. And I think sometimes people can't relate to that original impulse. And so it's nice that you're bringing that back to people. Maybe you can, and I always ask guests, you know, to start out, because I'm trying to sort of normalize spiritual experiences for people. Can you talk about a spiritual experience that you had, maybe as related to this work or not, just something in your life?
Well, the spiritual experience that I can relate specifically with a Black Madonna is I'm trained as a scientist, and so I tend to be very, very intellectual. And people will often say, well, what is your experience and this and that? I'm like, well, I read lots of books and things like that. And that's not necessarily a spiritual experience. But I when I was doing research for my first book, The Black Madonna, Mysterious Soul Companion, I was going to the major Black Madonnas. And the one that I had the most intense experience with was Our Lady of Jasna Góra, which is in Częstochowa, Poland. And it's so interesting because I was there on this day, way back, I think it was 2008. So I was there on All Souls Day.
Wow, this day.
Yeah, this day. Isn't that interesting? That
it just
clicked right as I was speaking. And if you've ever been to Poland, Poland is the most Catholic place on the planet. I mean, they out-Catholic the Vatican, and I really mean that. I mean, and any minor feast day, all of Poland closes. And so I arrived, and everything was closed. And because it was off season, you know, for tourists, what was wonderful was I got to go into the chapel where the Black Madonna was. And what they do at this chapel is they have masses like from 8 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock at night. And they're all in different languages every hour. And so when I was going in, all I could hear was this beautiful voice chanting liturgy. And I went in to the first mass, which was in Italian. And because there was nobody there except me and five other Polish people, I got to sit literally at the foot of the altar, and her image is way above the ground. And what they do with a lot of the Orthodox icons, which this is an Orthodox icon, they put a gold cover on it called a Riza. And when you're at a distance, all you can see is the gold and you can't really see the image inside. But what it looked like was I was peering into the cosmos. Hmm. And I just was so moved by that. And I was so moved by the devotion of the few people in the room. And it was like I could resonate with all the prayers that had been in that place. And I simply started to weep with the immense gratitude and with the mystery of what this image really symbolizes, and the fact that I did feel like I was looking into a portal into the infinite, which it, for many of us, is how we do experience divinity, that it's this infinite presence that's almost beyond description. So that was a very powerful experience for me. That was very not intellectual.
Mm, yeah, thank you. I mean, I have goosebumps all over right now. I think you painted the picture of what you experienced there so poignantly. And that is the thing that's so interesting to me about your work, is that you bring this depth of knowledge and like information and also this huge spiritual picture at the same time. So again, there's your alignment with the science and the spirit, you know, science and spirit coming right together in your work. So one thing that's interesting to me is that I feel like I I'm still learning about, maybe we should explain why we say the Black Madonna first, but something that I've found like listening is that there a sense of place is really connected to these different Madonnas. So we could talk about that, but could you just backpedal a little, and just for people that have never heard of the Black Madonna, I hadn't really heard of it until a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a term for an artistic genre. And I always say in my podcasts and writings, I'm not in charge of artistic genres, but it's a term for Madonnas that are predominantly in Europe and the New World, that the skin color of the mother, and if there's an infant, like an infant Jesus in the picture, the infant will also most of the time be dark. There's a couple where the infant is white, which I think is very interesting. And in my opinion, these images really reflect the first 1,000 years of Christian art. And we tend to see different approaches to expression of the Virgin after the Renaissance. Mm. And the images can be statues, they can be stained glass windows, they can be mosaics, they can be paintings, icons, and the bulk of these images are in Western Europe, but they tend to be all over Europe. And there's also, it's part of my new research, is looking at Black Madonnas in quote unquote the New World. So looking in the Americas, particularly South America, the Caribbean, and also the Pacific Islands. And it's a very lovely genre. And of course, there are Madonnas that are Black that are both ancient and modern on the continent of Africa that are images that resemble the people that live there. So that's my definition of the Black Madonna.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. You know, because people are sometimes like, well, what? Why is it called that? And I mean, as someone, you know, with my father's from Syria, and, you know, in searching in my life as a young person, you know, looking for sort of icons and representation that looked like me.
Yes.
You know, it's heartening to see, like, you know, no picture of God or even, you know, a fairy ever looked like me, you know? Right, so there's something about the identification, which I know that this goes far beyond, you know, what we would put in our political context today.
Yes.
But but it's just interesting to sort of think about that way. Okay, so you started this journey. Go ahead. Sorry, you were going to say something.
Oh, I was going to say, my experience with this is it's very healing to people that don't have European heritage to see divinity that looks like them. And yes, obviously, you know, divinity goes beyond skin color, but it's always very healing both to people with European ancestry as well as non-European ancestry to see that divinity has many expressions. And that's something that I really enjoy and I find very enriching by these images, that they're very healing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel that when I watch and listen to your work. Mm-hmm. So you've given us sort of the geography a little bit. Why is it so connected to place, the Black Madonna? Is that sort of hearkening back to, you know, Natura or the goddess or the, you know, earth, or what is that connected to?
Well, when I started my original research came for writing a paper for a certificate course on culture and spirituality. And at that time, there really wasn't a whole heck of a lot of information on the Black Madonnas. There really wasn't. There was a couple books, and then there was the Dayton, Ohio, Marion Library site, and a little bit on Wikipedia. But what I found most fascinating by the little bit that I could discover was that these images weren't from the European continent, that they had been brought there. And the bulk of these images were brought during the era of the Crusades. Before that, the images were brought with the monks from North Africa, Egypt, etc. And they you know, placed them. But what was interesting was the when they came during the era of the Crusades, they were placed all along the Camino de Santiago de Compostela, and specifically by the Knights Templar. And what I noticed was where these images were placed, they were specifically placed along the Camino in areas that had traditions of being mystery centers that were transformed into Christian shrines and churches. And that in many cases, there was always some sort of dark goddess, dark meaning colored, dark colored goddess associated with the place. And so one of the most profound places is at Chalta Cathedral, where there was a Black Madonna since the cathedral had been there. And before that, there was a spring, like a little well, which you can still visit in the crypt. And this well, this spring, was always associated with a dark goddess. And some people call her Inanna, others Kibele, others Isis. And then eventually this was transformed into a dark Madonna, the Mother Mary. So the place to me, and it's also something that's evolving in my own research, it seems to me that these images are placed along these mystery centers because they are connections and portals that connect both heaven and the earth. And that's something I find really, really fascinating. And I keep having that affirmed as I move forward in my research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's exactly what I was wondering about, because that connection, I mean, I guess, you know, if we talk about the Christ being, and we talk about mm-hmm. the blood of Christ and how it enters mm-hmm. the earth. You know, you have this mm-hmm. connection between the spiritual and the earthly. Mm-hmm. And it would seem to me with these Madonnas, you know, it's the same. And of course, going back in history, there's mm-hmm. this ability for humans to connect more directly with, you know, the elemental beings and mm-hmm. the spirits of the earth. And so mm-hmm. there's that deep history there. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that about the Camino. I haven't walked that, you know, mm-hmm. sacred trail, mm-hmm. but it's nice to know that they're sort of along the way.
To me, and we often think of the Camino as just in the pathway in the north, in northern Spain and part of France, but the Camino is actually a network of star correspondences that are literally over the entire continent.
Whoa.
And that's what I find so fascinating. And so they have, you know, there's Caminos through the Germanic countries, and Santiago is basically Saint James, and so in the Germanic countries it's called Jakobsweg, and you know Czestochowa is on Jakobsweg. Like, oh my gosh! And then Einsiedeln, the Black Madonna of Einsiedeln, is on Jakobsweg, which is in Switzerland, and so that the place is, you know, it really does set these images apart from their lovely paler toned sisters that are just gorgeous and very valuable, et cetera. But they don't have the connection with the earth.
Yeah.
As you know, like the Sistine Madonna, which is very popular amongst anthroposophists.
Yeah.
Every Waldorf school, which is wonderful. It's a beautiful, meaningful Madonna, but it's not a Madonna of place. Right. Whereas these Madonnas, and that's another interesting theme about many of them, is that they're discovered. And they're usually discovered underground. So someone will have a vision, or there's a cow that won't move, and then you know, something happens, and they start digging, and they find these Madonnas. And you know, whether or not these legends are true, what is meaningful to me is the symbolism that they represent. And you know, to me, that connection with the earth and there's a tradition, at least here in Europe, of a triple goddess, and there's a white goddess and a black goddess and a red goddess. And the black goddess is the goddess of transformation. And that is a very powerful image. And I think that these black Madonnas are an evolution and a transformation of those mysteries. That's how I view them. Mm-hmm.
That's so perfect. I'm just like taking that into my body, that idea of the Black Madonna and the transformation. And that's another thing I feel like people, I heard your presentation about the Virgin Guadalupe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, this idea of the vision that someone has, and it's specific to this very beautiful place in nature, and how mm-hmm. she's very persistent. Mm-hmm. You know, just like the cow won't move. Right. It's like, no, I'm here.
Right.
You know, like, right. You know, you recognize me. Do you see me here? Maybe you could tell us one of the stories that's one of your favorites about that has that persistence in it. Mm-hmm. Seems to me a feminine quality, because it's not by force. It's by persistence, you know.
Right. It's persistence and also what I would consider resilience. And something that's really interesting, particularly about the Black Madonnas throughout the Iberian Peninsula, is they were all hidden during the Arab incursions on the continent. And so there's so many of these images that were put places to keep them safe from, you know, the war, et cetera. And The one story that's actually my favorite is about the image of Montserrat, which is on the Camino, but it's on the eastern side of France. And the reason I love this story is it's very similar to the Luke nativity story. So there was this lovely image that was, you know, discovered in the Holy Land and said to be carved by St. Luke, and it made its way into Byzantium and then was given to some bishop, I think, in Sevilla. And it made its way up to this area called Marisol, and the locals knew that the Arabs were coming, and so they hid this image. And I always said the church archives in the 7th century weren't that accurate, and so they forgot where they put it. And about 100 and 150 years later, there was a group of children of local shepherds, and they saw a beam of light coming out from the mountaintop, and they heard all of this angelic choirs singing, and they kept coming out every night and seeing this amazing image, you know, this incredible event. So eventually the children got their parents to come and view, and then the parents witnessed this, and they got the priest, and he came a couple times, and eventually he went to the local bishop and said, there's something going on here. So the bishop said, all right, let's get a search party. And they go up to the top of the mountain, and they follow the beam of light, and it takes them into a cave, and they see this image of the Virgin and Child, and that's how they found it. And I just love that, all of this parts of that imagery, that it appeared to shepherds, and it was found in a cave, which resonates obviously with the nativity, you know, that the infant was born, you know, in a stable, and that she was found. And she also, they wanted to put her somewhere else, and she wouldn't move, so they decided to build a shrine locally and visit that to this day. So that's one of my favorites.
Wow. And what does that look like? Is it a painting, or is it a, do you know?
No, it's a statue.
It's a statue.
Actually, on the icon for my podcast, that's the image. That's in Montserrat. And that is, you know, to visit that shrine is so amazing. It's so amazing because it's like she's considered the patron saint of Spain, and the cathedral that's part of the shrine is relatively new. It's around the middle 1800s, and it's in a Gothic style, but it's right in the Montserrat means the sawtooth mountain. That's what it means. And it's right like in the side of the mountain, and you can walk all over these, you know, the beautiful mountaintops, and there's incredible nature to witness. But the image is in that large cathedral, but you can go to the cave where they found her, and the original hermits set up, you know, their individual hermitages before they built the cathedral. So it's very meaningful. It's very beautiful.
Yeah. And if they hop over to your podcast, The Black Madonna Speaks, they'll see that image, and it's really moving and amazing. Yes. You talked about, you know, the depiction of the child there too, with do they always have a child with them, or sometimes yes, sometimes no?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. There's so many different ways to picture the Madonna, but what's interesting is if there is an infant with the Madonna, it's usually you know, where in like Raphael's Madonnas, she's usually holding the child and the cheek and things like that. These Madonnas tend to have the infant a little bit more separate. And a lot of the images, particularly the statues, they are seated. They're in the presentation of, you know, divine wisdom. And the infant is usually standing in between the Madonna's knees. It's just a different presentation, actually.
So I want to know, like, when are you going to do like the Black Madonna tour so that we could sign up and well, go on the Black Madonna? Oh, you did?
Virus. Yeah, we had this unplanned virus got involved. Hopefully in the, you know, the end of 2023 or end of 2024. Right now, I have planned a tour in Namibia to look at the sacred origins of the Golden Heart of Africa, because one of the streams of research that I just find so fascinating is that these images harken back to, you know, the beginnings of Christianity, but also this divine wisdom that comes up from the South. And it's very powerful. So we'll be doing that next fall. I think it's September 17th through October 2nd. So I'll probably be doing a Black Madonna tour the year after that to go to these different ones. But yeah, I had a whole Camino thing planned and the,
the
pandemic happened.
Oh, well, that, I mean, count me in for the...
Okay, I will. You're on my mailing list.
So oh, yes. So for you, how do you feel like, for you and for everybody listening, how can we bring this into our lives? I mean, one of the way I'm doing is, of course, listening to your podcast and just learning and and growing in my understanding. But do you have everyday practices related to, you know, your connection with her?
Well, one of, you know, the simple thing I have is I usually have some icon in my room that I just see. And so I was able to get a local Black Madonna, Bulgarian Black Madonna that I have in my room now. For me, it's just keeping, you know, this image. It's always wonderful to have an image that you can focus on. And it is part of your meditations, if you like. But for me, my, I would say my daily practice is being reminded of the resilience of these images, because, as I said before, they're discovered, because usually they're hidden or they're involved in shipwrecks or the churches burns down them, and or they're broken into several pieces. I mean, they always have these stories of destruction, and yet they repair themselves and they endure. And I think particularly now with this amazing part of our collective evolution that's very, very dramatic. I must say it's a very dramatic time to be alive. And it's always been a dramatic time to be alive as a human. But right now, there's just so many things happening all at the same time. And for me to hold on to these narratives, these stories of resilience and survival and, you know, reinvention, you know, how they, even if they were destroyed, they reappear in a different yet similar form, and they continue to inspire. So that's what I would say is my daily practice.
That is so powerful. What a thing to carry with us every day. Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else you want to share about your journey and about your work? And you know, I know everybody knows where to find you now because I keep mentioning your podcast.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the podcast and the YouTube channel is pretty much it. And I have numerous books in the pipeline. I mean, I've done a book on, you know, the Black Madonna Mysterious Soul Companion. And then the next one was Our Lady of Guadalupe, Mysterious Messenger of Destiny. And then next year comes the Black Madonna in Byzantium. And then I have one coming out about Wisdom of the South. and also this really fascinating theme of the connector, as above, so below, and also the science and spirituality of darkness. That's the final one where, you know, this, and it was interesting how you were saying, you know, I weave science and spirituality together. And something that I find so fascinating, especially in the Middle Ages and in antiquity, was the whole concept of, and even the word science. It used to be called natural philosophy. And all of the scientists, their reason for exploring nature was so they could understand God. And so the more you explored your world, the closer you could be with God. And then after the Renaissance, those two things got separated. And science is separate from, you know, spirituality. And I see anthroposophy as unifying those two streams. But that's also what I see happening even in the broader culture. It's like we've gone as far as we can in material reality, and the things that we're starting to discover in the nature of darkness, you know, the images that are coming from the Webb telescope and, you know, weaving together ancient philosophies of the beginnings of the world, and everything begins in darkness, and darkness is not something we should fear. And I think that's one more symbol of the Black Madonna, is that it's inviting us to our origins and also to our futures. So that's how I look at it.
Wonderfully said. Thank you. Oh, sorry, I'm coughing. Wonderfully said. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. And I know on your Patreon, if people are interested in your books, I know you get some chapters out to those that join you. And I'm just looking forward to, well, I hope you come back to Edinburgh next time. Oh, I did have one question from a listener. Is there a Black Madonna in Rosslyn Chapel? Because I didn't think so. Even with all that association with the Templars, there's no Black Madonna in Rosslyn Chapel.
Well, maybe in my
somebody
opinion,
ran off with it.
They didn't finish.
They didn't finish. But that,
you know, you could look at it that way. But what's interesting about Rosslyn Chapel is that, you know, a lot of the cathedrals, they have you know, structure and architecture that embraces the summer solstice, and this one, it's different. They have a different day, but it has to do with St. Matthew's Day, which I think is interesting. And, but that, you know, that whole area surrounding Edinburgh is just really rich with Templar history and impulses. I mean, the Camp Hill there is very much inspired by the Templar ideals. So there's a lot going on in Edinburgh, and I just love visiting there.
Well, good. I hope you'll come back, and thank you for your research and for bringing it out to so many people. And yeah, one day we'll get to meet on a trail or a, in a chapel or just over a cup of tea.
I would love that. Thank you again, and all the best to you.
Oh, thank you, Stephanie.